dear little baby, my sweet little baby. Look at my baby and me.
Now, even in this very secular society of ours, there's an almost spiritual reverence for pregnancy and for birth. We imagine there is a profound bond between a mum and her child, a bond which has something to do with the sheer fact of pregnancy. So what motivates a woman to become a surrogate, to become pregnant with someone else's child and then hand that baby over? Well, let's meet two women who've been thinking about this. Jane Caffarella is a journalist and she's also a playwright, and her play E-Baby is being staged this week by Ensemble Theatre in Sydney. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Nice to have you here. And Angela Savage is an old chum of ours. She's writing a novel about international surrogacy in Thailand. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Nice to have you back. So, Jane, when did your interest in this begin, surrogacy?
Well, I worked on the accent pages of The Age in the late 1980s and 90s, and so I was informed by that. I was one of the first to interview Maggie and Linda Kirkman. Linda had the first IVF altruistic surrogacy, had her sister's child. So I sort of had that background. And then when we moved to Thailand 10 years ago, I met a woman who'd had both her children via a surrogate. I interviewed her, but it never went to print because of legal issues.
Was she a Thai?
She was a local woman. We met actually in the...
Sorry, local by you, Australian?
She was an expat. No, she wasn't Australian.
She was an expat, okay. Yeah. She'd had a Thai surrogate.
No, she had a US surrogate.
Oh, okay. Right.
And the interview never went to print because of legal issues, but I always wondered about the surrogate. She spoke very warmly about the surrogate, but I wondered what motivated somebody who had no obvious economic need. And then when we moved to Singapore in 2012 and I wasn't working full time, I started to do some research. And I found, like online with YouTube videos and also online forums, and I found myself in this world, an amazing world that had its own lexicon, had its own values. And it was what was amazing about it was that while surrogacy was enabled by the technology largely created by men, it was women who were negotiating this whole sort of brave new world of how babies were made in the 21st century. And it had incredible highs and lows. And it was such fantastic material for a play. Mm. So that's what led me to it.
Well, you can imagine why a sister would carry a baby.
Yes.
For a sister who couldn't have a baby. I mean, we get that.
Yes.
But you're saying there are women. I suppose the stereotype I have is of a poor woman in the third world who is driven by poverty to do something that is an incredible
exactly.
intrusion into her body.
The amazing thing about the situation in the US, and I think that's a sort of a template for what might happen here in the future, is that the motivation goes right back to what it means to be a good woman. There are many, many women in the US who are Christians who are doing this. And in the play, Nellie is a Christian who's the surrogate. And what motivates them is this whole idea of sort of being a surrogacy angel, being a good person. And women traditionally have been the ones who have made things good in relationships and families. And it really taps into that sort of motivation. And also there's the whole issue of the guilt of the fecund. You know, there's a lot of issues regarding infertility. We know about infertility. There's a lot of grief out there. And people who find it easy to have children, often it'll tap into that sort of whole guilt. Well, I found it easy, you know, and my womb isn't doing anything at the moment. So it's sort of pretty easy to go from lending a hand to lending a womb.
Here, let me have a baby for you.
Yeah, that really strikes that. And then also there is the guilt of, or the gratitude of those who have had infertility issues and who've been on IVF, who've completed their families. And then they decide, well, I know what these people are going through. I'm going to do it for them if I can. So it strikes into this sort of, I think, almost anthropological sort of primal desire, and also very much the Christian thing in America. I mean, the language of surrogacy itself, surrogacy angel, the gift of life, it sort of implies a godly act.
Angela, how did you get into this?
Well, Michael, as you know, I've had a long-standing interest in Australia's relationship with Southeast Asia, and my crime novel is set in Thailand, and I started reading relatively recently about an increase in the number of applications for Australian citizenship from babies born in Thailand, and it traced it back to an explosion in the surrogacy industry there. And I've also been intrigued by and with reproductive health issues pretty much all my adult life. And this the issue of surrogacy in Thailand really brought those issues together for me.
And do the Thai surrogate mothers conform more to that stereotype that I said before of women who need to do this for economic reasons but who would rather not?
My reading of the literature, and it was pretty limited because the Thai authorities, of course, introduced a ban after the baby Gammy case. But in that period, there was a bit of anthropological research done. And while it's true to say that the primary motivation was financial for these women, it's very complex, Michael, because in Thai culture, children owe a debt to their parents for having been born to them. And boys in Thai society can pay off that debt by becoming monks for a month, whereas girls can't. And their desire to earn money is often about supporting their parents. A number of the vast majority of surrogates talked about going into surrogacy to make money to pay off their mother's debts or to buy a house for their mother and father to live in or to look after their parents. At the same time, surrogacy is considered quite a noble act in Thailand. The Thai word for surrogate actually means the mother who carries merit. So it's seen as meritorious. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to traditional village society where, you know, if someone in your family couldn't have children and someone else could, well, there'd be a child that would be given to that childless couple to raise. So there's been that kind of traditional surrogacy's gone on.
I suppose the key question is not are we affronted or am I affronted by what seems sort of transgressive behaviour, but are women who act as surrogates damaged by this?
Or exploited. Yeah, they're key questions. And I don't think there's a simple answer to those questions.
I agree with that entirely. And it's not black and white. I think that, you know, it's very easy to sort of have a position either way, but I think that the complexities, the more you delve into this, the more complex it seems. I mean, I think there is vulnerability and exploitation on both sides as well. You know, I did this story in the SMH about that this week, about the financial problems facing both the cost.
You mean the parents who commission this process are being exploited too? How are they exploited?
I think in terms of the financial situation, there was the story I did in the Sydney Morning Herald was about the cost of IVF. Alan Trounson has come out about this too, and the sort of because in Australia they can set their own fees when you have the sort of standard fee, but doctors can set their own fees about this. And it is big business, and it's huge business in America too, to the point where surrogacy agencies are connected to finance companies, and just with one click you can sort of, you know, get a $100,000 loan to fund your surrogacy. And, of course, the problem with that is that there's no guarantee of any success.
Yeah.
It has an astonishingly high failure rate, the whole IVF industry. Yes. And that in itself I find, you know, deeply, it's something like an 80% failure rate. Yes. I can't think of any other industry that could continue to grow financially with the possible exception of the weight loss industry with, you know, a failure rate like that.
So yes, I need a new back fence, but I'd like it more than 80% chance of it. This is Books and Arts on RN, and we're talking about surrogacy because the two women you're listening to have both tackled this question in their art. Jane Caffarella is a playwright, and her play E-Baby is being staged this week at Ensemble Theatre in Sydney. And Angela Savage, as you know, is a novelist. Usually she writes crime fiction, but now she's writing a book about international surrogacy in Thailand. So, Jane, let's talk about the play. It's called E-Baby. It's set in London, or between London and Massachusetts, and it's about the relationship between a woman who wants a child and the surrogate. That's why it's called E-Baby. So the main characters are Catherine and Nellie.
That's right. It's a two-hander, and it's very much focuses on their relationship and how they negotiate this over 16 months. And it's an exploration of the journey that they undergo and of their characters. And it was made into a two-hander. That was a big decision at the time. But their husbands are alluded to, but they're not included. And one of the reasons for this is because in all my research, it was largely happening between women. So I really wanted to focus the relationship on how the women negotiated this relationship.
I suppose as a man, though, I wonder what the man's role in this, because I'm going to be the father of this child. It's going to come into my home, and I will want to bond with this child too.
Well, the men are alluded to, and they're very much part of it, and the pressure that the women feel, they are both the relationships with the men are part of the pressure that they have in their lives. But when I did my research, a lot of the men were involved initially but not eventually, and a lot of them had to be persuaded into this. And, in fact, there's an allusion to this in the play. Nellie sort of alludes to how she persuades Mike, her husband. And once they're persuaded, then they're on board. But initially, sometimes it's economic that they're persuaded. There was a funny thing about a guy who was persuaded on a very hot day with the promise of air conditioning.
Yeah, that should do it. I don't know, men are that shallow, are they? Is Mike the father of this child?
No. This is a gestational surrogacy situation.
What does that mean?
That means that Catherine is using her own eggs and her husband's sperm to create an embryo that is implanted into Nelly. And so she is carrying the child, but she has no genetic relationship to it. Well, that's a little bit sort of grey in terms of research at the moment, but this is not her genetic child that she's carrying. So it's really her womb that is being hired.
And how did you research the intimate side of this? Because, you know, playwrights loves to eavesdrop. I know I live with a playwright. She's always eavesdropping. I have to talk to her about it sometimes. Annie, I have to say, stop. But have you been eavesdropping on people in some way?
Yes. It's just amazing how online forums, surrogacy is all over the internet. And they support each other through these online forums where they will debate the pros and cons and describe their journeys in great detail. Now, eBaby is entirely fictional, but it is based on true events that happen in surrogacy every day. And it's just amazing how much they
disclose.
Yeah, they just disclose, and also on YouTube. And I think they forget they're not talking to their friend, they're talking to the world. And it's sort of a naivety. It's quite interesting, that aspect of it. So it's very easy to eavesdrop. And also there's a particular forum called What I Regret. And so people can post anonymously. So you get a lot of insights through that. And there's a website called Anonymous Us.
eBaby is such a great title.
It's fabulous.
You said the baby's not in it, of course.
Yeah, well, no, still, the eBaby resonance is terrific. So what have you decided to do, Angela? What are you doing with your story? Because I just think of you as writing crime.
I know, and it's been so difficult because, you know, I set out not to write crime, and then, of course, all this criminal-type behaviour started happening. I'm like, please, people. Mine's a three-hander, largely. Oh. So it's the intending mother, the Thai surrogate, and the sister of the intending mother who's got a long-standing history in Southeast Asia. So I've tried to kind of loosely but not strictly align the characters with the three positions that you read on surrogacy. There tends to be a pro-surrogacy position, an anti-surrogacy position, and one that sits in the middle, which is kind of a harm reduction, you know, middle path kind of position. So I've tried to look at it from those angles. And I've got the voice of the husband in there a little bit as well.
But it's mainly women, isn't it?
Well, it's mainly women,
Is the intended mother, what nationality is she?
Australian. So she and her sister are Australian, and the surrogate is Thai, of course. Mm. And like the States, but not like India, I think, the industry in Thailand, certainly the recruitment of the women is very female-centred.
Yes.
Of course, in my case, or in the case of Thailand, you've got the added challenge of language and cultural barriers, which make the relationship building a lot more of an investment or a commitment if you're actually going to make that part of the arrangement.
Now, Angela, earlier this year, a parliamentary inquiry into surrogacy handed down its findings, and it recommended that commercial surrogacy in Australia, within Australia, should remain banned, that altruistic surrogacy was okay. And they also said it was preferable if all this happened within Australia rather than having couples go overseas to search for surrogate mums. And now you've been following this closely. I think you read the submissions and so on. What were the arguments that were played out around the ethics of paying a woman to be a surrogate?
Look, as I keep saying, it's highly complex. I think, you know, at the most kind of gritty and non-altruistic, for want of a better term, it's just an issue of cost. People look for an affordable way of having a baby. For gay men in particular, Thailand offered an option that they found very difficult to access in Australia, and they would use terms like reproductive refugees to describe their own kind of attempt to parent. I think, you know, the industry people in Australia talk about best practice, and certainly the requirements, the regulations, the regulatory framework in Australia is quite fantastic and not necessarily paralleled in the countries that people are travelling to have children. But it is very complex too, because I think there's a degree to which, you know, having a baby, as you started the show by saying, is such a momentous event. And for people who really struggle to have a child, whose experience of fertility is one of being out of control, I think there are lots of attempts they make to control the process, and part of that is the distancing. Mm. So part of it is choosing an option that puts them at arm's length from the birth mother. Yes. And even the financial arrangements for them are this is how I get off scot-free. If I pay my way, right. I pay off the debt of gratitude that I need. Now, I don't know whether any of that is true or not. I have my own thoughts about that. But I think in some respects, and this came out in some of the parliamentary submissions, people actually do choose the overseas option because they want the distance. And, you know, the biggest fear on the part of an intending parent is that the birth mother will lay claim to the child. And ironically, in developing countries, the biggest fear for the birth mother is that the intending parents won't take the child.
Yes, how ironic.
Oh, my Lord, this is so complex.
It is.
Well, thank you for starting the debate here on the program. It's been good to meet you both.
Thanks Great. Very much, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Jane Caffarella's show is called E-Baby. Such a clever title. It's on at the Ensemble Theatre in Sydney from the 19th of October, that's Wednesday, through until Sunday the 13th of November, so a good long run there. And Angela Savage is a writer, and we look forward to reading Angela's novel when that's good and done on RN. This is Books and Arts. I'm Michael Cathcart.